All right, my friends, thanks for tuning into the podcast, where, as always, we'll discuss the professional literature and the evidence-based protocol as they relate to the effective treatment of clinically significant anxiety symptoms. I'm Chris Lines, licensed psychotherapist and OCD spectrum disorders treatment specialist, and this, well, this is OCD Straight Talk. This podcast is made possible by NoCD. NoCD offers effective, affordable, and convenient OCD therapy. NoCD therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention, or ERP therapy, the gold standard treatment for OCD. With NoCD, you can do virtual, live face-to-face video sessions with one of their licensed, specialty-trained therapists, and they accept most major insurance plans. To find out more about NoCD, visit nocd.com. That's nocd.com to book a free 15-minute call. For people in the state of Kentucky, you can go to kentuckyocd.com. That's kentuckyocd.com and book a session with me. I mean, I think that when you get into the specifics of it, it's one of those things that proves, I think, pretty central to a more exhaustive understanding of OCD as a topic, diagnosis, prognosis, successful, maybe you could say, therapeutic intervention, like understanding symptoms and the way that those symptoms fit together and function, or the way that they fall apart and why. Like, I think that when you understand the idea of relapse, and maybe you could say relapse prevention, if you understand that idea well, I would say, well, you understand actually a lot about OCD. So, like, I'll often have a conversation with patients at the end of cases or toward the end of cases, and the conversation is like, essentially, how did we get here? Because a lot of patients, when we get to the end of treatment, it's like we're starting to talk about termination and discontinuing our work together and our weekly, or maybe sometimes at that point, bi-weekly meetings. It's like, I'm not sure if I want to get out of therapy, because if I get out of therapy, then what if my OCD just comes back? Maybe I should just stay in therapy. It's one of those, I think, conversations that's really important. How do we get here? Like, what happened such that your OCD went from what it was to what it is? Like, you know your OCD well enough to know that that wasn't happenstantial. It didn't just sort of open the door and say, thanks for coming. You know, like, that's not the way it works. It wants to continue to dominate your life. So how do we get from a place where OCD was completely dominating, completely controlling your life, with you almost entirely subdued, to a place where the tables have turned and now you're dominating the OCD and it is largely subdued? How do we get here? So I'll ask patients, like, let's suppose there was somebody in the room with us today and that person is brand new to therapy. You know, he or she is super symptomatic and anxious about the process and really hopeful that it's going to work. And that person looks to you as somebody who's, well, you're done, or you're largely done. Your OCD is comparatively weak now. You've dominated this bitch. And so it's like, well, how did you do it? Right? Teach me, tell me. And if you were to gather together everything that we've talked about through the course of our work, all these different strategies and skills, these different processes and ideas, like, if you were to sort of summarize everything that you've learned into a single rule, and if you were to say, well, do this, make sure that you do this, don't get it wrong, get it right, make sure you do this, and if you do this, whatever this is, if you do this, you're going to get better, or in all likelihood, you're going to get better. But if you don't do this, in all likelihood, you're not going to get better. I mean, that would be a pretty terrific piece of information or advice to somebody who's just walking in. And so what do you think that would be? And usually people will say it in different ways, but very typically, to put it in my own words, what I get back is, well, you've got to focus your attention not on managing your anxiety. You know, that's the sort of knee-jerk, understandable reflex. Try and somehow arrive at a place where you feel better. Not try and get rid of your intrusive thoughts, but you need to focus your energy and focus your attention and focus your time in a disciplined and consistent way on identifying and stopping compulsions. So I think that when we start the conversation about relapse prevention, it is necessary to look in the rearview mirror. How did you get here? And however you got here is going to be, well, that's going to be pretty relevant to how you stay here. There isn't some arbitrary point in time where the clinical rules change. How you got here has a hell of a lot to do with how you stay here. And how you got here has majored on ritual prevention. It's minored on some other things, I suppose you could say, but to a very, very great degree, we focused on identifying and stopping compulsions. That doesn't mean we didn't do any exposure work. It certainly doesn't mean we haven't talked through and really worked to apply on the ground floor in real time the idea, the acceptance of uncertainty. No, we've done that stuff and we've applied elbow grease and we've worked really hard at it. But the essential idea has always been, we need to stop compulsions. So how you stay here has everything to do with how you got here. So when somebody relapses, there's a couple of things that generally are happening. The first of which is, well, they're now experiencing more severe symptoms than the symptoms that person was experiencing before. And what I mean to say, that's sort of a coded way of saying the goal of therapy is never zero symptoms. It's less severe symptoms. It's kind of like, I might say, shaving your face or shaving your legs. The goal of shaving your legs or shaving your face isn't the removal or the eradication of hair. You're merely cutting the length of that hair down to the skin such that, maybe if I can say this analogously, the hair doesn't affect your life. But if you stop doing what you've been doing to manage the length of the hair, well, sure enough, the hair will grow back and eventually you'll have a beard or you'll have hairy legs and the hair will affect your ability to function. Again, if you follow my analogy. So the goal of therapy isn't zero symptoms. It's better severity. It's lesser severity, maybe significantly lesser severity, but it's not zero. So when we have a relapse, we're not talking about all of a sudden an arrival of symptoms where we had an absence of those symptoms previously. No, we have an increase in symptoms where before they were maybe more subdued and less severe. And the question, of course, becomes, well, how does that happen? Again, it's a bit of a complex and involved answer. The first piece of it, I think, would be stress. When people go through stressful periods of time, these become periods in which they're more likely to experience more severe symptomatology. And this is something that we know from etiology through the work of David Barlow and David Pauls. They've done tons of study on etiology. By the way, etiology is just like the fancy term that says, how did this happen? Why did these symptoms start to begin with relative to diagnostics? So with regard to etiology, it's like, well, stress is a big part of why this happened to begin with. Now, to be clear, both Barlow and Pauls would highlight the biological element of etiology. So both of them would agree that individuals who present with OCD at some point in their lives were born with a biological predisposition. So they got OCD, you could say, as a biological likelihood from their bloodline, from someone in their family. And then at some point in the future or during their lives, a period of what Barlow would call special stress activates that vulnerability or activates that, maybe we could say, gene, and individuals present with OCD. They have intrusive thoughts. Those thoughts cause high anxiety. They engage compulsions, and then off we go. We have OCD. So great. Now, why am I telling you this? I'm telling you this because when relapse happens, often it is the same sons of bitches involved. You got typically stress, individuals will report going through really stressful periods at work, or a family member has died. Something has happened that has disrupted the apple cart, and the level of stress in their lives has gone up, maybe significantly up. And as a result, they'll experience an increase in intrusive thought frequency, and of course, the intensity of the anxiety that's associated with these thoughts. So that, and a lot of people can relate to that. When they're stressed out, their anxiety tends to go up. They have more intrusive thoughts, and so on. So that's the first of those pieces relative to relapse. But I'll tell you, from having worked OCD support groups for a lot of years, that there's lots and lots of people who are subclinical who still sometimes will have a week or so of time during which they're experiencing more frequent intrusive thoughts than normal. Their anxiety levels are higher and it feels like they're relapsing, but they know strategically, they know better than to respond with compulsion. So they'll work to resist those. And I'll circle back in the next group meeting to this or that same person and, hey, how's your anxiety been? What's been going on with your OCD? And the answer has been, oh yeah, my anxiety is much, much better. And what they're specifically attributing that to is, well, they never engaged compulsions, or if they did, their engagement was few and far between. And so when you're talking about relapse, it's not just stress that ultimately results in more frequent intrusive thoughts and higher levels of anxiety. It's also the response of compulsion. And that sounds familiar to you, I imagine, from this Barlow and Paul's dialogue that we had about etiology. It's a very similar concept. The way that a relapse happens, it feels a lot like when OCD starts to begin with. You have that special stress concept, and then you have the onset of intrusive thoughts and the experience of anxiety, which results in some compulsive responses. And typically when relapse happens, what you have is compulsions that come in to kind of cope with this unexpected increase in thoughts and anxiety, but then the very compulsions that are brought in to help us somehow feel better only then stir up that hornet's nest, and the thoughts come racing back and the anxiety increases pretty exponentially. And I think that that's often what OCDers will report. That when you see a true relapse take place, it seems to happen pretty quickly. That individuals will go from having not very many intrusive thoughts to within a month or so, the severity is fairly pronounced, to within another month, it's gotten to be quite severe. But the point of it is that the relapse happens pretty quickly. The big takeaway from the talk about relapse prevention is, remember, OCD is a simple and mechanical animal. If you pull the C out of the OCD system, and if you keep it pulled out, what you're left with is O and D, obsessional disorder. And the longer you work to keep that response away, the longer you work to not engage that coping-related compulsive behavior, the more you're draining the system of its strength. And eventually the D will sort of be pulled out as well. And what you're left with is the O, the occasional intrusive thought that, yeah, does cause some anxiety when it happens. But we're not talking about disordered obsessions, largely because we're also not talking about compulsive responses. So you pull the C out, which means you've got to be looking for your compulsion. So oftentimes when I'm ending a case with a patient, part of the relapse prevention dialogue is, well, I want you to be engaging 1, 2, 3 exposures weekly. I want you to always work to stop compulsions. But the piece that I'll include in this is, and I want you to keep up with your ritual monitoring sheets for at least 4 to 6 months. Now, I don't know how many people actually do that, but in my opinion, that's an important piece because, again, you're not going to successfully stop compulsions if you're not looking for them. And I can't say how many times someone has relapsed and they've given me a call and, oh, Chris, I need to see you again. My symptoms are bad. And one of the first questions I'll ask them, not in a disparaging or accusative way, but just sort of gathering information, is, have you kept up with your ritual monitoring sheets? And almost invariably, the answer is no, I haven't been doing those. And again, no criticism. It's just an observation. It's really important. If you're going to successfully stop compulsions, you have to keep your eye out for them. Because as I've told you many, many times over the past 4 years during OCD Straight Talk, compulsions don't jump off the page at you and say, hey, I'm a compulsion, come stop me. They're doing their best to camouflage and blend in. And like I've said to you, compulsions hide in plain sight. You have to work hard, thoughtfully, to identify these behaviors as behaviors that fit into the definition of compulsion. And once you do that, then you apply the elbow grease. You work hard to wrestle these compulsions into submission. So you can be an individual who biologically is vulnerable to the onset or the relapse of OCD, and you could be somebody who is also going through a period of special stress. And as a result, you can be someone who is experiencing a higher frequency of intrusive thoughts and a higher than normal level of anxiety. But if you're not engaging the compulsions, if you're really working to resist those and prevent them, what you'll likely find is that the frequency of the intrusive thoughts and the severity of the anxiety that they cause decreases pretty naturally over the course of a week or a week and a half. And if that doesn't happen to you, I would say go back to the drawing board. Look harder. Are you engaging any compulsions? If you look hard enough, if you look long enough, you're going to find a response. Stop the compulsions in order to prevent your relapse. Well, that's it for another episode of OCD Straight Talk. Feel free to reach out with any questions you might have to chrislines04@gmail.com. If you found the podcast helpful, consider giving it a 5-star rating or subscribing to OCD Straight Talk for structured help with your anxiety or OCD symptoms.